Broadcasting live from our Westlake studios, overlooking the great city of Austin, and helping you maneuver through this waning dystopia, it's episode number 269 of Shirts and Skins with Chad and Trey. Coming up this hour at 12:45, the Crap Bag gives the Mayweather poll results. At 12:30, Julio Jones has a new home. And in mere minutes, Texas baseball moves on, Longhorn football picks up a Bama transfer, and the Mavs collapse. I'm Trey Elling, and sitting across from me is a Waxahachie native and level-headed Aggie who may speak your death into existence if he doesn't like you. It's Chad Hastings.
You damn right. Hope everybody had a great weekend. Lots of sports to deal with today. And if you are a Texas baseball fan, I'm guessing you didn't need to check your blood pressure over the weekend. Oh my goodness. We will get to that group and what they did and the opponent we are still waiting to find out who they're going to play. We'll get you that update. But first, a little bit of weekend recap. Trey, I know how much of a fan you are of my shout-outs. And today we have a special shout-out because I've been told by Sacamano's wife that I have to shout-out myself. That's right. It was her birthday over the weekend, and we were trying to find a place to go do some day drinking and eating, and I suggested Hayes City Store. So she says, I now have to shout myself out for that idea. So shout out to me for thinking of Hayes City Store, and of course, shout out to Travis and the incredible folks, and Tamara, and the incredible folks at Hayes City Store. We had a great time. We had a little food. We had a little drink, and we had a great time.
What's the opposite of going meta with something? Because you've just done that by shouting out yourself.
I don't know.
Mrs. Sacamano, he does not need to shout himself out. You just need to get with the program. We've been talking about Hayes City Store for a long time. These airwaves.
Hey, you'll have to excuse them. They do live in Georgetown.
Oh, I don't blame them for not going. Look,
that's
I would go
ways
to,
away.
If I lived even within 10 or 15 minutes of Hayes City Store, I would be eating there all the freaking time.
Yeah.
But I live in Cedar Park. That is a haul. Yeah. To get out there. It's close to 45 minutes for me.
It is, yeah. And like I always say, no matter where you live, it is worth the trip. And it was certainly worth the trip this time. The food was excellent. Trey, I got a look at the pizza. Now, I didn't pizza cheat on you. I didn't want to do that.
Okay.
Sacamano's wife is a veggie pizza freak. So she had a veggie pizza. It looked fantastic. I never tried it. The man next to us at the table, every time he took a bite of that pizza, I wanted to go tackle him and take it away from him. It looked incredible. So
pizza is one of those things, by the way, that you can get away with being purely vegetarian on. I prefer pepperoni pizza, but I totally understand anybody who goes with one of those other options.
So if you haven't checked out Hayes City Store, definitely do that. Travis, as always, was so nice. And the new expanded ice house is awesome. Even more covered area out there. The weather was pretty good for us, and it's just a great, great time. So,
you see Travis out there?
Yes, we did. Cool. Yeah, he came by and said hello, and met my wife and the Sacamanos, and it was a good time. Good time was had by all, and it took me about a day to recover.
Oh, was there more brown liquor consumed?
There was thankfully not as much. I did not dream about scorpions this time.
Okay.
So, this was more about the combination of alcohols. I gave my stomach way too much to think about. My stomach is way simpler than I was treating it over the weekend, so I just had to kind of come down off of that yesterday.
Was the kid with you guys this time?
She was not.
Okay, good. So she didn't have to see Daddy for a second straight weekend in bad shape due to alcohol consumption.
Thank goodness she did not see that. Thank goodness. Did you have a good weekend?
It was a great weekend, man. We got some sunshine this weekend, which, you know, I've been begging for over the last few weeks. Like, I'm feeling the seasonal affective disorder thing. I'm trying to supplement with vitamin D, but there ain't nothing like the real thing. And we got the real thing this weekend. Actually took our first full family trip to the, as we call it in the Elling household, the slide pool yesterday.
Yeah.
It's the pool that has like the water park level slide that the kids will stand in a line 10 deep to go down. And it's like a 2-second slide, but I'm not going to say it's more fun. It's a different sort of fun versus the slide that you and I were used to growing up.
Okay.
That was next to our pool where it was like just like the white slide that went straight into the water.
This isn't a full, is this a full tube slide?
Full tube slide, okay. Yeah.
All right.
Full tube slide, and that was a lot of fun. And, you know, for all the great bonding moments that I have with my wife and kids, the swimming pool is like up there with like our favorite thing to do together.
Mm-hmm.
So to get to do that for the first time, the pool was full also. Folks weren't too scared because they've either had the vaccine, they've had it, or they're just throwing caution into the wind. And then we went and ate at Bufalina in their, at one of their outdoor tables after that as well. So
nice.
It was a true on complete Sunday, which did include me playing sand volleyball in the morning.
Oh, that sounds all kinds of normal. That is good news. And you know what? It also looked and sounded pretty normal over at the Dish over the weekend.
Yes, it did.
They were packed in there. There were announcers from around the country that were there giving love to the Texas crowd. Craig Way told me that on the Arizona State broadcast, that the Arizona State play-by-play guy was just saying all kinds of nice things about the crowd.
That's cool.
That if whenever they get back home and things get normal again, they hope it's half as good as what the Texas fans were giving them. I know some of the Arizona State pitchers, when they were running down the line to get to the bullpen, actually were kind of smiling at the Texas crowd for giving them, you know, giving them some, because that's what you're supposed to do. So Texas had a packed house at the Dish, and they stomped through this regional. I don't recall many times where it looks this simple for a team. Normally, Trey, there's one game that feels like a baseball game.
Mm-hmm.
There's a 5-4. There's a 7-4. There's a deficit. I think that's what you call it, right? When the other team has more runs than you do at that current moment, you're at a deficit, right? You're down. Texas never trailed.
Mm-hmm.
Not for one moment of this regional. They outscore their opponents 33-5 combined. The only thing that slowed them down at even a little bit was that little bit of lightning and rain that the other teams dealt with. That's it. And they go through. The pitching was incredible. Pete Hansen with 13 strikeouts yesterday. So Texas sweeps the regional. That's fantastic news. Extra fantastic news. Those that follow the sport know that they were the two overall seed. They were going to match up with the 15 seed that was going to come to Austin for the Super Regional, and that was Florida. But Florida got eliminated in their own regional. Florida got eliminated in Gainesville.
Wow.
So I know what you're thinking. What about that dangerous 2 seed Miami? Nope, they're out too. So right now, the 3 and 4 seed in that region are playing. South Alabama, I'm not kidding, and South Florida are playing right now. They're in the top of the 9th. It's 4-0 South Alabama. Now, if that holds, they'll have to play again because South Florida hadn't lost a game yet.
Ooh.
So there will be another game this evening to determine Texas's opponent. They started this. They resumed at 11 a.m., I believe, because they've had all kinds of rain, shock rain in Gainesville, Florida. But extra great news for Texas. You're playing like that. You're pitching like that. You're hitting like that. And now you've got one national seed and Miami that are out, and you're going to be playing one of these teams coming in. That's big news for Texas.
It's really encouraging to see the pitching, hitting, and defense all working in tandem right now to dominate opponents that, let's be honest, you should have dominated those three opponents. And they took care of business. Like, I'm okay with this team not experiencing any stress this weekend. You're all right not experiencing stress when the competition is mediocre at best. And Fairfield, I forget if they were the second-ranked team or not, but they had the best record by far, but they were without their best player. So at that point, it felt like Texas would be able to cruise to victory, and sure enough, they did. Didn't even require that Monday game. And to see one of the two teams that they will be facing next weekend here in Austin potentially having to play a second Monday game, that is going to wear on either of those two teams. So that, once again, works in the Longhorns' advantage. And if you're a Texas fan, you have to feel pretty good about your chances of making it to Omaha right now.
The other thing that maybe is good news, this is down the line, the number one overall seed is Arkansas. Arkansas has been pushed to an extra game today. It'll happen at 6 o'clock tonight, so if you're a Texas fan, you hope for that to go 27 innings and Nebraska beat them. Like, that'd be great. That'd be the best version of it. But you at least can say, okay, Arkansas is going to have one more game they've got to deal with before the Super Regionals. So Super Regionals get going on Friday. Texas is definitely a part of it. Make your plans to get to the Dish. All you need is an opponent right now. I mean, this sets up so well. If you're a college baseball fan, if you're like our guy Kevin Dunn or Dustin McComas, who we have on every week, or Joe Cook from Inside Texas, who we're going to have on today at 1, if you can just sit back today. If you're a Texas fan, just enjoy all of it. We still have 8 slots to fill in the bracket, and you're in. Mm-hmm. You're in. You're hosting. You're smashing people, and we've got 8 slots to fill today. If you missed it, TCU did not advance, and their regional is still being determined. Oregon State's going to play Dallas Baptist later on. Texas Tech did advance. Congratulations to the Red Raiders. They did get through. So all the guys we had on last week talking about it, they nailed it. They said Tech had probably an easier route to get out, and TCU's was a little shaky, and it proved to be the case. Dallas Baptist and the others took TCU out.
It's why we talk to the experts, Chad.
That's it.
They know way better than we do, especially on college baseball.
Well, here's something you don't have to be an expert on, Trey. This is just my general thought on it. If your college football team gets a transfer that was at Alabama, that can't be a bad thing.
Correct.
You agree with that?
Yes.
You should, because now you got 2 of them. Now you got 2 guys.
We'll take it.
Yeah, Texas already with, I believe it's Ben Davis is the linebacker's name,
mm-hmm.
Already had an Alabama transfer, and of course the Alabama connection with Steve Sarkisian. Well, how about this? A running back named Keelan Robinson, not Keenan Robinson. That'd be the linebacker from back in the day for Texas. This is Keelan Robinson, K-E-I-L-A-N. Young man from the Washington, D.C. area, started out at Bama. In his freshman year, he rushed for like 250 yards. He opted out last season, saving on the wear and tear. 5'9", 184. He will now be fitting into the Longhorns running back room. So whatever it's going to be, Trey, this is a guy that Alabama deemed good enough to offer a scholarship, and he was at Alabama as a running back.
And Steve Sarkisian deemed good enough to not only coach up at Alabama 2 seasons ago, I know he sat out this last season, but to take him on here at Texas,
mm-hmm.
even though the running back room is starting to look a lot healthier here in Austin, to add him to the fray, I'm happy with this one, Chad.
Yeah, also, from what I'm reading, he's a guy that they intended to continue to bring along at return positions and some special teams help. 5'9", 184, so a little on the smaller, a little more of a speed back kind of guy. But apparently he's a guy that can catch the ball pretty well, you know, out of the backfield. So that's big transfer news for the Longhorns, plus all the official visits got cranked up over the weekends.
Yes, they did.
Big names from around the state and around the country were in town, so things starting to feel normal again in that regard. But Keelan Robinson is the name of that running back. Big news for Texas there. Another transfer for 21.
As far as the official visits this weekend, Chad, you read something pretty interesting. I think you said you read it on Inside Texas that I think is worth telling the people about.
So the thing, you know, and there's a lot of different names that were thrown out. I'm reading the article here from Justin Wells, Jerry Hamilton, and Eric Nalin from Inside Texas from over the weekend, just kind of going over some of the guys that visited. And it starts with Derek Brown, the kid out of Texarkana, the edge rusher. But I just thought one of the things I kept seeing on the different reports was about the NIL discussion. And in the Derek Brown notes, it says one of the biggest selling points was NIL. UT's name, image, and likeness sales pitch was extremely thorough, from ways to generate revenue on social media to reinvestment plans with that revenue. Texas has the plan to act as soon as possible. That's huge. And if I'm a Texas fan, that's what I want to hear. I say it all the time. Texas needs to be Texas. And there are certain ways that when they are Texas, they can do things nobody else can do.
Mm-hmm.
This is one of them. Steve Sarkisian, just learned a lot from Nick Saban. But Trey, coming to Austin, he's going to be able to make an argument to these kids that Saban can't make. He can get close. He can be in the neighborhood. He can be in the area. I don't think he can make it exactly the same way, though, that Sark can.
How do you mean? Just because of the UT network once you're done with school?
The network, the branding power, the revenue that is created every year. They are on top of that list, have been right at the top of that list, or number 2 for a long, long time. I'm not saying Bama doesn't make money, but they are right up at the top of that list. Plus, you put in the Austin factor and everything. So if I'm a Texas fan, I would just be glad to hear that this part is being addressed. Texas got passed up in the past. That's a weird way to say that. But when the whole thing with analysts and social media and some of those things got started, Texas wasn't necessarily on the forefront, but these last few years, it really feels like they have dialed into a couple things. And one of them we talked about, they were even ahead of Alabama on the, you know, program to help you develop.
Yep.
And then that's the overarching idea. But now, already with these early visits, they're talking to these kids about name, image, and likeness. All schools are going to do it, but it's good to hear that a school like Texas is understanding its power here, that Sark is tying everything together. And the fact that the kids are then saying this to the insiders, and maybe the insider asked the question, did they talk about name, image, and likeness? But the answer could have been no.
Oh, of course they did. And guess what? That's great free promotion for Texas, too.
Right.
The way that these kids are talking about it and just discussing how buttoned up the Longhorns are and how they were pretty clear with things, I think that works in the Longhorns' advantage, even more so than some of the tools at their disposal.
It's big time. That's big time stuff. So visits beginning. There'll be more of those coming through June. And again, we'll check in with Joe Cook of Inside Texas coming up at 1 about the latest in Longhorn recruiting.
So I've allowed you to avoid talking about this for long enough in segment one, Chad.
Yes.
Dallas Mavericks.
Oh, my God.
Thoughts?
I wish I'd been wrong.
Yeah.
Wish I'd been dead wrong. I wish you'd been right.
I wish Bucky had actually been right, too.
I wish Bucky had been right, his 10,000-unit play or whatever it was. I wish the Mavs had closed the door in Game 6. Because I told you, if it goes back to, you know, goes back to L.A. Game 7, I just couldn't pick away from Kawhi Leonard. I just figured out, I figured they'd find a way. And they did. There's a lot of things about that game I could get into. But, Trey, here's the thing that keeps blinking in my head. How in the world did the Dallas Mavericks outscore somebody in the NBA playoffs by 30 in the paint and lose? I know I'm the only one that still looks at this stat, but they still keep it. The Mavs had 62 in the paint, and the Clippers had 32. And the Mavericks still lost a Game 7 that way.
What was the Clippers' three-point percentage?
Oh, well, that was the extra sad part. 47%.
They finally started hitting those open shots that they had been missing earlier in the series.
And I was loving every three they took throughout this series because I figured that's better than what I think their strength is, which is the mid-range and driving the basket. The Mavericks didn't allow them to have too much easy, and I thought the Clippers did settle for a lot of those threes, but they hit big ones. And there's nothing bigger than that. Was it Reggie Jackson that hit that three? Oh, my God, that's the biggest three of the game. That's straight-on three when the Mavs had actually started to make a move. But once again, Mavs asking Luka Doncic to do way, way too much.
Well, they thought that his number two was going to be Kristaps Porzingis, and it's becoming clear to everybody that it's time for a separation in that partnership. It was a deal worth pursuing when they made it with the Knicks a few years ago. You want to try it out, but at this point, I think we can say pretty confidently that's not going to work, and they need to find a better number two for Luka starting next season.
Trey, he scored 20 points in the series one time, but in three of the games, he scored single digits, did Kristaps Porzingis, and the Mavs lost two of those three. But the sickest part is the rebounding. Go look at the rebounding numbers from this series. What is his job? He's 7'3" and can't get a board.
Yeah.
He's 7'3" and had three rebounds in a game in this series, and four in another, and five in another.
Part of rebounding is want to, and just a little bit that I watched, he did not look like he had that quality in him with regards to going after boards.
Finney Smith was better than he was on the boards yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
Finney Smith kept him in the game with some of those offensive rebounds. That's another number. Mavs got all over him on the boards. Didn't really matter. Somehow it didn't matter. They've got to put a better team around Luka Doncic. As excited as I was to see Luka Doncic become a Maverick, Trey, and I sort of made this discussion in my head, and I was like, oh, yeah, no, Mavs got him, and Atlanta, you know, they settled for Trae Young. That's how it was in my head. But then do you watch it play out? Atlanta just took game one of that series. They're really dangerous, and go look at the team around him. Now, he works hard. He does a lot.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't feel like he's got near as much on his shoulders as Luka does. Go look at the talent they've put around him. The guts and the grit of a guy like Capella. Bogdanović and the ability to just, you know, hit, shoot. Can you imagine if Bogdanović played with Luka? If Luka had that kind of guy he could trust, he has no one he can trust game to game. Nobody. There's not one player he can trust to help him score.
I think Hardaway is one of those guys that he can trust, but you'd like to have a better second option than Hardaway Jr.
I'd love for Hardaway to be the three.
Yeah.
The third option out. The fact that he has to sort of step up to that two, it's not quite there. The Mavs were, you know, it was a bizarre series, and you know, the home team hadn't won a game and all that. That might be the extra insulting part here. As a Mavs fan, I don't think I just got beat by the team that's going to win it all.
No.
I mean, they're all right. They played worse than I thought they would.
No, you feel better about Phoenix right now. Denver's a bit of a toss-up. I mean, Jokic is dealing with a version of what Luka is, but part of that is bad injury luck. I mean, he doesn't have Jamal Murray anymore, and Michael Porter is really coming on and proving to be a guy who was probably worth someone taking in the top 10, much less sliding to Denver where he did in the first round a couple years ago. So you feel like either of those two teams can probably beat the Clippers. But then again, they don't have the Kawhi factor.
Yeah, oh no, he was amazing in these last couple games. I couldn't ignore this stat, even though he just did it to my team. This is wild. Kawhi Leonard averaged 30 points a game in the series and shot 60% from the field in this series. In the playoffs, since 2000, only two guys have ever done that, him and Shaq. Shaq did it in the 2000 finals, Trey. The average distance of his shots in that series, 4 feet 6 inches. The average for Kawhi, 13 feet 4 inches.
Wow.
Unbelievable stuff from Kawhi Leonard. That's why I ultimately picked the Clippers to win when you asked me late last week. I thought they'd win the last two games. I wanted to be wrong, but he's just too damn good, especially when you let him get to easy looks. And he finally realized, okay, here's how we win this series. I'm going to make it as hard as I can for Luka and dare somebody else to beat him. Some of the defense he put on Luka was incredible. Knocking balls away, deflections, all that stuff that Kawhi's so good at. So, yeah.
Well, this is a big reason why Luka struggled in the fourth quarter throughout this series.
Absolutely.
And I heard some people wondering, oh, well, does Luka not have that clutch gene? No, he probably has the clutch gene. I mean, we've seen that throughout his career. But when you're going up against one of, if not the best perimeter defender in the NBA, and a guy who will absolutely lock down a dude like Luka, who doesn't have the overwhelming athleticism, then it's a little bit unfair to say that Luka is turning into a choke artist at this point in his career.
Yeah, it's a tough thing, man. I don't know if I would quite call it choke, because at that it just looks like he can't breathe at the end of games. He's got to work.
Yeah.
He's got to get into some conditioning too. He's still probably a little. He needs to muscle up a bit to go 4 full quarters, especially if they're not going to get him help.
Strength can help, but I mean, look, the help has to come. Otherwise, this team is going to tap out after a round or two.
Yeah, he feels like a poor in terms of the team around him. It's like a poor man's Damian Lillard right now. And they don't even have him. He doesn't even have a McCollum.
No.
Like you mentioned Denver. Right now, if you just took Jokic and Luka, leave them on their teams and swap the rosters, I'd take that in 2 seconds.
Oh, yes.
I mean, instantly. Look at the team around Jokic. It is a different feel right now. So Mavs are out. Couple games tonight in the NBA. We'll set you up for that. Also up next, the big story in the NFL. Look out, Houston Texans fans. Julio Jones ended up in your division. We'll talk about the move on the Horn.
Shirts and Skins.
You started on a Monday. What do you got, Trey?
This is not New Music Friday on a Monday, Chad. That's because the batch of new music that I saw on Friday and listened to over the weekend, I'm going to be honest, it sucked.
Pretty bad.
So instead, we're going random playlists based on my love of Alabama Shakes, Modest Mouse, and Woods.
Wow.
This is Rose Windows. That's the name of the band. The song is called Wartime Lovers.
Good sound. I can feel the Alabama shakes. connection there with that, with that song. Rose Windows. Maybe you want to check that out. Trey's got more random stuff coming for you off of one of the many algorithms out there trying to tell you what kind of music you like based on what other kind of music you like. College baseball, we did get a final in the South Battle of the Souths. South Alabama did win it 4-0, so they've got to play again. South Alabama and South Florida will play at about 1:10 our time. The winner will be coming to Austin for the Super Regionals. So stay tuned throughout the afternoon. We will let you know as soon as we know. Mississippi State's trying to get through. There are 8 slots still to be filled in the bracket. I believe Mississippi State's one of those that has not lost a game. They've just been backed up because of weather. If they beat Campbell, they're up in the top of the 4th, 4-3. They are going to advance as well. Somebody on the text line wants a little love for Oregon State. Oregon State's one of the teams that made sure TCU is not advancing. It's Oregon State against Dallas Baptist this afternoon at 3. You can watch that one on ESPNU if you want. The winner of that will advance. And let me also give a little love. The only other team I saw throughout the weekend in terms of watching scores that even came close to doing what Texas did to 3 opponents was Notre Dame. If our man Kevin Dunn was focused on just those 2 teams this weekend, because he does follow Notre Dame football, not sure how closely he follows Notre Dame baseball, but he definitely did not have a stressful weekend. Notre Dame smashed folks. They beat UConn 26-3 over the weekend.
Wow.
They won by even more than Texas was in a couple cases, but just like the Texas games, everything was like 10 or more runs and blowing them away, double digits on the run totals. So Texas and Notre Dame both advanced through on the right side of your bracket, along with Tennessee. Overall seeds, TCU is out. Florida is out. Louisiana Tech is out right now.
Vanderbilt is still playing?
Vanderbilt is still playing. They've advanced.
Okay.
Vandy is through. The one super regional matchup we have set is Vandy against East Carolina. Also, Arizona, Tech, and NC State have advanced on that side of the bracket.
Gotcha.
Arkansas does have to play today. Texas fans, it'll feel weird, but root for Nebraska earlier, coming up in the evening, 6 o'clock start with those folks. Somebody texted in, sorry about the Mavs, guys. All of San Antonio was rooting for you. Do you think that was the case? Do you think the San Antonio fans put aside their Mavs hatred and led with their Kawhi hatred?
Yes.
That's the sense I got.
A lot of Spurs fans are still disgruntled about that one.
Yeah, I get the sense that that was the case, too. I really wish my Mavs could have done it for you, Spurs fans, but you know what that's like when Kawhi – you know what it's like when Kawhi is on your team, and then you know what it's like when he is facing your team. It is a dangerous thing, man, the quiet assassin that is Kawhi Leonard. Mavs could not get it done, and they got busted up pretty good. 15-point margin, and like I said, 47% from beyond the arc for the Clippers. That was the death mark for the Mavericks. All right, so the other big news of the weekend, Trey, it happened, I think, on, was it Friday the Julio Jones thing came down?
No.
Or Saturday?
I don't think it was until Saturday.
Saturday, okay. To me, this is, I mean, other than stuff on the field, this is the biggest story of the weekend here. Julio Jones, we'd heard different teams, different possibilities. It ends up being the Tennessee Titans. So Texans fans, he is coming to your division. He is now a 32-year-old Julio Jones. And Trey, right from the beginning, you were accurately saying that even though Atlanta was talking first-round draft picks, that is not what they were going to get, not for a 32-year-old version. You were right on that.
Well, a 32-year-old guy who's getting paid that much money to play the position, and possibly a guy who's going to be looking for another deal before too long also.
Yeah, that's a good point.
All of those things factor in. And ultimately, I think not having to give up that first-round pick. Tennessee gave up 2 picks, correct?
Atlanta gets a second round next year and a fourth round in 23.
So I think that's why they had to throw the fourth rounder in 2023 in there, because the second rounder wasn't quite enough. But to avoid having to give up a first rounder and get a first-round talent like he is, while also, by the way, bolstering a position that took a hit to free agency this offseason. I mean, yep. They lost Corey Davis. He was an important cog in that offense last year. You've upgraded now at that wide receiver, too.
Yeah, so Corey Davis now with the Jets. They also lost Jonnu Smith.
Jonnu Smith's no longer there, but they've got a bevy of tight ends there. I don't think that's going to be as big a deal for them, although I did like him a lot, his athleticism. He didn't quite put it together this last year. The addition of Julio Jones to go along with Derrick Henry, obviously A.J. Brown, Ryan Tannehill getting to operate off of play action like he has.
Yeah.
And I think a defense that has improved this offseason as well. Tennessee is a legit threat in the AFC this season.
Here's another guy that may have been, I missed it. I was reading up on the team today and I'd forgotten he ended up in Tennessee. Do you know who else is a Titan now? It's a guy I love because he played at my school, but he was on a team that went to a Super Bowl, and now he is a receiver for Tennessee.
Name's not coming to mind.
Josh Reynolds.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
He signed back in March.
He's a great slot option for them.
He can't be your one, obviously, in the NFL, but they fit him in really well at times with the Rams. I loved what they did with him. You get him in the slot and start dragging him across the field while you're trying to deal with Julio Jones and A.J. Brown going vertical. That's really interesting.
Yeah, he is not even an ideal two, but I think him at three with the two guys on the outside, that makes a ton of sense.
The thing I love about Josh is he's so dependable catching the ball. He will catch a ball for Ryan Tannehill. That's huge. I love his hands. So I'd forgotten he was on the team. Julio Jones obviously has great hands at 32 still. He's still going to be, I don't know if he's still in that top five discussion anymore, but he's a damn good receiver, even at 32.
I've got to give your Aggies credit because between he, Mike Evans, obviously, Christian Kirk, you guys have had a string of receivers come through that I've really enjoyed watching play.
There's been some good ones, and then they've made a little bit of, been a name for themselves in the NFL, at least to prove they can be effective. So that's been really good.
So do you think this swings the balance of power now? Do you think the Titans are the favorites in the AFC, surpassing Indianapolis, who I think a lot of people have them at least neck and neck with right now, if not slightly ahead?
I'd still leave it as a neck and neck.
Okay.
And, I mean, right now is a weird thing to say. But of those two quarterbacks, don't you have to give the nod to Tannehill right now?
No question.
Don't you have to give that respect to him? I know what people like to say about Tannehill, but deep down, you trust him right now more than you trust Wentz.
You do. And you trust that offense more than you trust the Colts offense. But the Colts are better defensively.
They are.
And the Colts are capable offensively, too. I think if they build this offense this year, if they build it around what they were doing at the end of last season, and that is handing the ball off a lot to Jonathan Taylor and Nyheim Hines, and then allowing their quarterbacks to work with less pressure when they're dropping back after faking a handoff, much like the formula in Tennessee right now, I think that's going to work wonders for Carson Wentz. I think the potential for this Colts offense is way above where the Colts offense was last year, even though there are legitimate question marks about Carson Wentz right now.
It's interesting to see. By the way, you care about those two games at all?
Absolutely.
A little Colts-Jag.
Those are two teams that just
Colts-Titans.
Those are just two teams that independently I like watching a whole lot, so yeah, I'll have a fun time watching those games and watching both beat the stuffing out of the Texans this year.
How about this, Trey? By the time we get done with Halloween, both of those games will have been played.
I don't like that.
At Tennessee, September 26th, a Week 3 matchup, and then they play them on Halloween at home.
See, that's what I'm talking about right there, man. One of those games needs to be happening in December.
Man.
That's foolish scheduling by the league to not have those two teams playing at least once in the last month of the season.
You're absolutely right. Unless the Jags are decent because the Colts end at Jacksonville. That might be. Might be something to end with. But I agree with you. I'd spread those out. I would have taken Tennessee and moved that down a little bit. So we're going to get to find out with those two. They play each other. What is that? That's twice in a six-game stretch. Those are the two games this year. That's good stuff.
Okay. I mean, it's going to be a fun two games in 6 weeks for sure. You're right about that.
Man, Julio Jones, a Tennessee Titan. That was the big story in the NFL over the weekend as camps continue. We're about this week we get into that mandatory part of things where it's not just voluntary anymore. Teams are going to start reporting. Will Aaron Rodgers report to the Packers? Probably not. We'll keep our eyes peeled for all of that. Up next, in the crap bag, Mr. Mayweather and Mr. Paul got into a boxing ring, and I will tell you what happened, plus an update on a couple other stories from around sports as they just keep dropping in Paris. This is The Horn.
Shirts and Skins with Chad and Trey.
getting going on a Monday. Hope you had a good weekend. Texas baseball waiting for their opponent. What do you got, Trey?
This is Temple's Mystery of Pop.
Trey's going with a random playlist because the new music wasn't quite up to his standard. So far, South Alabama and South Florida are the standard in that region. The folks in, I bet that place is empty in Gainesville today. You imagine all those Florida fans, how pissed off they are?
Yeah.
Get to host that region. The Miami fans are all gone because they lost too. It's South Florida and South Alabama. South Alabama won earlier, so they'll play again starting at 1:10. We will keep you up to date on that a little later in the show. By the way, it was like Mississippi State did. Oh, no, they delayed it. My God, there's rain going on there in Starkville. They cannot get finished. 5-3, they're leading, and they have a delay. So games coming up today. We still have 8 slots to fill in the bracket in baseball. And we were just talking about the Julio Jones move for the Tennessee Titans. Trey, how about this for the first 3 games for the Tennessee Titans? You just mentioned that when I told you Josh Reynolds is there now, that A&M's had a nice little run with receivers, Christian Kirk. Well, how about Christian Kirk and Josh Reynolds one against the other week one? Tennessee hosts the Cardinals week one. Week two at Seattle. Week three, they host Indy. That's a good start.
Yes, it is.
That's a tough start, too. We'll see how Julio Jones and the crew deal with it. And if you are wondering, let me just scan this schedule real quick. Tennessee does not deal with the NFC South to where the Falcons would be on. They deal with a little bit of it. They deal with the Saints, but they are not going to play Atlanta. So Julio Jones to Tennessee, a part of the discussion today. Also a part of every show is the weird discussion that's always going on in my head. We call it the crap bag. Here we go.
Chad's crap bag.
Crap bag. If you need an easy way to remember it, just think of a bag of crap.
Brought to you by AV Consultations, 255-8678. 255-8678 or go to avconsultations.com. So normally I take pride in what I watch. Today I'm taking pride in what I didn't watch. The Mayweather-Paul fight, totally forgot about it. Totally forgot. Till about 10:30 or 11 o'clock last night. It was already over. I tried to make myself remember, why are they doing this on a Sunday night? That's the other thing. Is it a real boxing pay-per-view if it's on a Sunday night? I decided no. So I'm really proud of myself. Not only did I not fall for the Mike Tyson, Roy Jones Jr. thing, never watched a second of it. It was over before I remembered it was happening. Same thing last night. If you're wondering, they fought the 8 rounds, and the key there is probably that Logan Paul survived. Logan Paul survived the 8 rounds. Those that did score it boxing-wise, now there were no actual judges at ringside, but those that judged the fight, I think had it like 6-2, Mayweather. It's Floyd Mayweather. Like, he didn't get hit much at all, although I think Paul connected with a couple punches, and Floyd Mayweather outpointed the guy. That's what he does. He makes you look a little silly. He outpoints you. But after the fight, Trey, he said, you know, credit to Logan Paul. He's better than I thought he was, and he survived. And the survival is his victory. Nobody got knocked out. They allowed knockouts, but outside of that, they didn't do any scoring. But nobody got knocked down or out in this fight.
I don't understand why they wouldn't have judges there.
I don't
like
know.
It's established as an exhibition. It's not going to count against Mayweather's record if he loses.
I don't know.
What's the reason not to do that?
Well, the only answer possibly is I believe I'm right in saying that wherever they were, I think they were in Miami or something. Wherever they were, the fight commission that would have sanctioned it didn't. So okay. I think maybe at that point you're not allowed to have judges.
All right.
Something like that, because then it's basically like a fight you and I would have organized in a backyard maybe.
There's clearly an audience for this. I mean, both these guys are getting paid however many millions of dollars to make that fight happen. So good for them for accomplishing it. It's just not something that's ever going to grab my attention enough to want to pay for it.
Now, again, I'm proud of myself on multiple levels. I'm going to save my pay-per-view money for this weekend because UFC's got a pay-per-view with multiple belts on the line, younger fighters. You're going to have to give me a real good reason to watch a 44-year-old man box. I don't even care if that man is Floyd Mayweather.
Right.
You got to give me a great reason.
I think the reason that they felt like they were giving people is the knockout potential.
Yeah.
You have a guy who puts dudes on the mat who might have a chance to do that against a guy who pound for pound is arguably the greatest of all time.
Yeah.
And it didn't even come close to happening, apparently.
Again, my response would be, you have a guy who literally has one fight, one, and he lost it, by the way. And people think of him as a boxer and somebody that could knock people out. Floyd Mayweather never gets hit. He may be the greatest defensive fighter I've ever seen in my life. Like, that matchup was made no sense if that's the argument for paying the money.
Yeah, but there was also a pretty big size disparity, too.
There was that. You're right.
And I guess Floyd Mayweather did catch him a couple of times in the middle of the fight, and he just shrugged him off.
Yeah.
It's 44-year-old Floyd who, you know, at some point earlier in his career, he did have that knockout power, but that was not his style, especially the second half of his career.
Yeah,
he's the greatest defensive boxer of all time.
Somebody says because of the size difference, the Florida State Boxing Commission would not sanction it. They did provide a ref.
And Paul was apparently using true-on boxing strategy also. When you have a guy who's that much bigger than the other guy, what is he trying to do? And this is something that people were complaining about after the fight was over with last night. You watch enough boxing, and when you see a guy who's bigger like that, he's trying to lean on the other guy to wear him down.
Yeah.
That's what Paul was trying to do. Maybe if they had 12 rounds, he might have been able to get there. But just in terms of the sheer numbers, the CompuBox stats, is that what they call it? CompuBox?
Yep.
The CompuBox stats were way in favor of Floyd Mayweather,
I'm sure.
Just in terms of landing punches. That's not surprising at all. And Paul was not able to get that one clean shot to give himself a chance to put Mayweather to the mat.
So in terms of boxing, I would tell you not to try to run that fight down and rewatch it. I would tell you to rewatch the Mike Tyson documentary. I did that over the weekend. It's now on Hulu. If you have not heard the story of when Teddy Atlas almost killed Mike Tyson.
Whoa.
I had no idea that story happened. No clue. That is a wild story. But they did a great job on that documentary. Also, for you pro wrestling fans, the Bret Hart documentary was great on A&E. If you are, these are documentaries you might actually enjoy, Trey, because I know you watched wrestling at one point in your life. These A&E documentaries that are hitting on Sundays, they're just really easy to watch. They take you through the story really well. The Stone Cold and Bret Hart and The Undertaker one was really good. Mick Foley's was amazing last week. But the Bret Hart one was great last night. So they're doing one every Sunday, and they've had a really good run.
More than anything else, I'm a sucker for a good story. And it sounds like that format is doing a great job of telling stories about guys who, in a lot of instances, have been through hell and back.
Yeah, no doubt. No doubt. Speaking of hell and back, the folks putting the French Open together, got to think they're in a little bit of a hell now. Serena got beat in the fourth round. Roger Federer withdrew because he's had two knee surgeries the last year, and he's trying to protect himself from Wimbledon. Djokovic got down two sets today. He did come back and win, though.
Wow.
So Djokovic and Nadal are still in. Also, Naomi Osaka has now withdrawn from another tournament. She's out for a Wimbledon tune-up, still dealing with the mental health stuff. So she's out for this June 14th event. Wimbledon's after that. Of course, the Olympics are in Japan coming up in July, her home country where Naomi was born. She came to the United States when she was three, I believe, but born in Japan. So some people are wondering, is she really going to be, you know, going to miss that, or is she going to play? So hopefully Naomi Osaka is doing well, but she's trying to deal with some stuff right now out of another tournament. Also, if you are, we mentioned the baseball stuff. I will tell you, I also checked out a little softball. Shout out to the James Madison team. They had already beaten Oklahoma when we left the air. They beat Oklahoma State, and they put up a damn good fight yesterday against OU. Rain postponed it. They've had to push everything back, but today at 3, they're going to play Oklahoma again. And the winner is going to the championship series. James Madison is they're tough to kill right now.
Who are they facing in the championship series? Either them or the Sooners.
It's going to be Florida State or Alabama.
Okay.
Yeah, so those two games are this evening. Hopefully the rain will get out of the way.
Do they do that as a best of three like college baseball does?
Yep, and it was supposed to start tonight. They had to move everything back. This was supposed to be game one tonight, but they had to move it. They made one of their games start like 11:30 at night trying to squeeze it all in. The damn rain.
None of us have escaped the rain this spring.
Well, you know, because when it rains in that sport, that whole thing is dirt. I mean, it's dirt from, think about it. Think about how much dirt it is in softball. Everything in that infield is dirt.
You know what they should consider doing?
Turns to mud so quick.
Turn all that dirt into what the dish does. Where it's the artificial dirt.
Just turf it out. I wonder if softball fields do that. Wonder if any softball teams have the fake dirt.
Hopefully not.
Let's hope not. All right, there's the crap bag for you on a Monday. Up next, Joe Cook of Inside Texas. A lot of Longhorn stuff to get to. Texas baseball looking like that. Texas football gets another Alabama transfer. And the recruiting discussion officially began June 1st. We'll get Joe's thoughts on all of it coming up on the Horn.